Now, my next guest, Joan Johnston, has joined me in studio to talk about her son, Leo. Many of you may have seen Leo's smiling face on the front of the Irish Times last week. Beautiful, beautiful little boy. Joan, thanks for coming in to tell us about him this morning.
Not at all. You're very welcome.
Joan, you might start by telling me a little bit about Angelman syndrome. This isn't a syndrome that I was aware of. I thought it sounded familiar to me, but I wasn't 100% sure. Leo has Angelman syndrome. Tell us a little bit about what it is.
Angelman syndrome is it's a neurogenetic condition, and it's quite a rare condition, although one of the more common rare conditions. It affects about 1 in 15,000 to 20,000 children. The reason you might have heard about it before is that Colin Farrell's son, James, actually has Angelman syndrome, and he's a huge advocate for Angelman syndrome awareness and helping to fundraise for research into it. Angelman syndrome, it's characterised by a profound intellectual disability, also severe developmental delay. They expect most children with Angelman syndrome will learn to walk, but it'll be later, maybe between the age of 5 and 10 at the latest, perhaps. Some children don't learn to walk, but that's the minority. It is also characterised by epilepsy. About 90% of children with the type of Angelman syndrome that Leo has will develop epilepsy. Leo's just started having his seizures in the last few months. So, and one of the other things with Angelman syndrome is that they can often have feeding difficulties. So Leo is now tube fed. And also, one of the best things about Angelman syndrome, because you always have to look at the positives, is that they have a very happy disposition. When we got the diagnosis about Leo, the hardest thing for me was finding out that Leo is unlikely to ever learn to speak, that maybe he might be able to learn to speak 5 words. And that was heartbreaking to me. But Leo is unbelievably emotionally available to us. He is the happiest child in the world. He has a smile, irrespective of whether he's in the hospital and he's feeling rubbish or if he's at home enjoying life with his sister. And I suppose that made the diagnosis a little bit easier for us.
And you mentioned there the happy disposition, and actually you'd told me before that a consultant had said to you, you know, the only reason that his details were screened for Angelman's was because a consultant said to you, is he happy much? And you said, yes, all the time. And then they actually decided to screen him for that syndrome.
Absolutely. It was, we were in clinic in Crumlin, and our consultant was looking at Leo and examining him and said, yes, His condition, you know, his features do seem to fit with a cerebral palsy type diagnosis. However, is he always this happy? And I was like, yes. I was like, when he's not in pain, he is a very happy child. And he said, OK, we'll screen for Angelman syndrome. And I'd never heard of it. And I said, I don't know about that. And he said, well, you know, I hope it's not, but we'll send the screen anyway. And to be honest, we're very lucky that he was so on the ball. Very often, Angelman syndrome won't be diagnosed until the children are a little bit older. That they get a cerebral palsy diagnosis or perhaps another diagnosis. And because it's rare, the screen wouldn't be sent until they'd no longer fit that diagnosis profile.
So he was really on the ball to notice the happy disposition of Leo that day in hospital.
Absolutely. We were blessed. He, you know, he's an incredible consultant and he has taken very, very good care of us. But yeah, he was on the ball that day, and without him having been so clued in and thinking outside of the box, perhaps, you know, we could have been in a different position.
So you have a lot on your plate at the minute, I suppose. And I've been reading some of the blogs that you've been writing in terms of, you know, I suppose what it's like. You know, you didn't expect this to happen. And you've told me, you know, you had no indication that there was any difficulty with the pregnancy. You had a normal pregnancy and a normal birth. He was a little bit early. But other than that, it was only something that landed on your lap then after Leo was born. Tell me a little bit about how you're trying to adjust to the fact that this has happened to you, to your husband, to your older daughter. The fact that this, your new life now, I guess, is extremely different to your old life and I suppose what you thought this life would be like.
Nobody plans for this. My husband and I wanted to have two children and we were excited about having a boy and a girl. We found out that Leo was going to be a boy when I was pregnant. And I had the genetic screening done, which screens for the common, you know, diseases and conditions. And they all came back clear and the pregnancy was normal. And the diagnosis, it's been a grieving process. And you grieve for the loss of future that you'd envisaged for your child with special needs. You grieve for the future of your other child, who, when Dave, my husband, and I pass away, Ella, his now 3-year-old sister, is going to become his guardian and carer. And that's a lot to put on a 3-year-old. And I suppose our parenting journey is completely different. We have to prepare Ella for that role, but also teach her how to take care of herself so it doesn't become all-encompassing. We have to learn to communicate as a couple. I think that Dave and I have had to probably do about 10 years of marriage compressed into the last almost year now since Leo's diagnosis, because it puts a huge strain on your relationship. It's not just the diagnosis and your grief for a future and how you imagined that someday you might retire and live the life that you had before you got married and had children, perhaps, that, you know, that's not going to happen. We're not going to be able to take off and have the amazing holidays we thought we might be able to do or things like that. So there's a huge grieving process, and also there's a grief for Leo and him having to be different in a society that is getting better at embracing differences but isn't all the way there yet. And that's really hard, that my son is such a beautiful, happy child, and to know that he will face rejection in his life, perhaps, from people that don't understand the condition. It's heartbreaking for a parent.
You've written a little bit about how your relationship with Leo, you've said this yourself, wasn't great when in those early days, and you suffered really badly with what you say was probably post-traumatic stress from the fact that he was very sick as a small baby and in hospital a lot. Go back to that period for me, or how did you manage, I suppose, to come out of that? You're very positive today, and I know you're looking ahead to the future. How did you go from kind of a very dark place maybe to where you are today?
So Leo, unrelated to his Angelman syndrome, ended up with viral meningitis when he was 2 weeks old, and we were in Crumlin for 2 weeks. He was very small and they struggled to get a good lumbar puncture sample from him, so they had to treat him for bacterial meningitis. So we were 2 weeks of antibiotics. And he had to have a general anaesthetic and have a line put into his neck, into one of the big veins in his neck, in order to give him his antibiotics. And he was an incredibly unsettled child. Part of Angelman syndrome is also that they don't require as much sleep as a child at the same age as them. In fact, they'd give the most dedicated insomniac a run for their money. I mean, Leo was only sleeping 2-4 hours cumulatively in 24. He screamed a lot. He had a very upset tummy, which can be quite common in Angelman syndrome. And also he had feeding difficulties that were initially diagnosed as one thing but have turned out to be that he can't actually swallow. So he had a lot of things that were making him very unsettled. And when you're up for, you know, 18 to 20 hours a day dealing with a screaming child, you go to a very dark place. That goes on for months and months on end. The newborn phase never ended with Leo and still is a challenge. You know, his favourite thing to do is wake up 1 and have a party until 6 a.m. So yeah, both Dave and I went to a very dark place.
Your world gets very small in that setup, and most people will relate to this because they've just had the newborn phase.
Yes.
And then they know that will come to an end. For you, unfortunately, you knew it was going to be prolonged. But when anybody is in that newborn phase, you're fighting fire and you just try to keep one step ahead of your baby every day. And sometimes for people that means making their world a very small place so nothing can go against them.
Absolutely. I was in the house. I barely left because I didn't know what he was going to be like. I think I remember I twice made two trips out with Leo, and both times he screamed inconsolably. There was nothing I could do to calm him, and I didn't want to do it again. My anxiety levels were through the roof. I was hugely anxious. I stayed at home. I stayed in my living room. I barely went anywhere else in the house, and only for a couple of friends that would pop over now and again. I had very little sort of adult interaction. My public health nurse would call, and also I was put in touch with the Community Mothers Programme, and that was really good, just to have somebody checking in on me. And it was actually one of them that realised that maybe I was suffering from postnatal depression.
You're a physiotherapist, Joan, and I think you'll say this yourself, but you probably approached that early days of motherhood as Leo was a patient of yours. So you would maybe help him as much as you could from a physiotherapy point of view, but maybe the mothering side of it, you were a little bit closed off to maybe.
Yeah, I mean, even though we didn't have a diagnosis at the time during those early days, I was constantly trying to problem solve. My clinical brain was looking at what the problem was and how can I solve it? How can I make it better? And yeah, my relationship with Leo suffered. I looked at Leo and all I felt was crushing responsibility. Mm. I loved him. I didn't like to hear him cry, but I had to put him down and walk away from him a lot because I didn't trust myself to continue holding him during those moments. And so I put him down and I would walk away. And every fibre of my mothering instinct didn't want to leave my baby crying without my comfort. But I needed to step away. And that was incredibly hard. And my relationship with Leo suffered. He couldn't feed properly and there seemed to be no apparent reason. And I longed for the connection of breastfeeding, but he just couldn't, and he would never be able to learn to latch on because he has problems controlling his tongue, and his oromotor control is poor as part of his condition. But without a diagnosis, you think you're the problem, or you think your baby's just being a pain, or so many different things. I was in a very, very dark space when Leo was 6 months old, and we'd been battling this for 6 months with very little sleep. I had suicidal thoughts. My husband also had suicidal thoughts. We were in hell.
Getting the Angelman syndrome diagnosis then, while, you know, as you said, you went through a grieving process, in some ways it gave you some, at least some answers. And you, there's something that you could latch on to. There's something that you could investigate. There's something that you could, you know, become an expert on, put all of your brain power into what is this syndrome and how are we going to manage it. And you have been on that journey now over the past couple of months. You met Colin Farrell, actually, you were telling me. He does an awful lot of work in trying to find ways of treating it. And Leo's so young, like he's only 20 months.
Yes.
So, you know, I guess your hope is that something will be developed or there will be a breakthrough that will help Leo.
Absolutely. When we got the diagnosis of Angelman syndrome, we looked online. Social media is an amazing resource for parents that are floundering and don't know where to go. So we found Angelman Syndrome Ireland here. We found Angelman UK, and we also found the Foundation for Angelman Syndrome Therapeutics in the United States. And that's an organization that Colin Farrell is very, very involved in. He was at the research summit and gala fundraising ball in December, and we were lucky enough to be able to get there, and we met him, and he's incredible in he has time for every single person. His interactions with the older adult angels at that research summit was amazing, and they raised on the night in that room over $2 million for Angelman syndrome research. Dave and I found hope in knowing that there are people striving to find a therapeutic for Angelman syndrome. At the moment, there is no treatment. There's only a treatment for the epilepsy, or there's a treatment for the feeding disorders, or there's therapy to help him achieve his movement milestones and developmental milestones. There's nothing there to treat the cause of the Angelman syndrome and therefore the symptoms. So there's a huge amount of research and very exciting cutting edge genetic research going into Angelman syndrome at the moment. And that's our ray of hope. we live our life in the reality of Angelman syndrome, and we certainly don't sit here and think, okay, we're just going to wait for a cure or a treatment. We deal with what we have in front of us right now, but that's a dark road to look ahead to sometimes. You can't think too far into the future. Mm. So what you think about is medicine is moving at an incredible pace these days, and perhaps someday there'll be a treatment that would potentially allow Leo to learn to talk and we will hear his voice tell us what terrible parents we are and all of the things that wreck your head about your three-year-old. I would love to hear Leo say.
In the meantime, Joan, and finally, just to mention the Jack and Jill Foundation, they have, really been lifesavers for you and your husband.
Yeah, I describe Jack and Jill Foundation as being life-saving to myself and my husband. They have made this journey easier. There are lots of things that make it harder, but they are one of the things that have made it easier to know that we have a nurse that can come in and can take care of Leo, and Dave and I and Ella can go out and spend some time together, because Leo takes up a lot of our attention and his need is greater than Ella's many times. But to know that his need is being taken care of and we can not worry about that we can leave the house and dedicate that time to Ella or ourselves as a couple. There's a huge statistic that I think it's about 80 or 90% of couples that have a child with special needs, their relationship doesn't survive. So Jack and Jill allow us to work on that, to make sure that we're still connecting as a couple, not just parents of our children, and also to make sure that my daughter, who's three, and it's a developmentally very important age, is still feeling that she's as important in our family as Leo is, and that her needs are being met too.
Joan, thanks so much for coming in to talk to us on News Talk Breakfast this morning. Say hello to Leo. We were expecting to see him this morning, but he's at home having his party, so we left him to it. But thanks for coming in to talk to us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.